Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I'm Jason Snell, and I am joined by your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter. It is Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey.
Welcome back.
That sounds good, by the way.
Episode 2.
Episode 2.
We made it.
Who would have guessed?
Most bet against this happening, but here we are a week later with episode 2.
Some predicted that it would follow within the year.
Right. That's right. If the over-under was like at 6 months.
Yeah.
So.
They were being optimistic. But you know what? We're going to prove them wrong. We are going to be as regular as
A thing that's regular.
A thing that's regular. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's what we should call this podcast. A thing that's regular.
Yes. A podcast. A regular podcast about television. So big week. My TiVo began to fill with things that aren't baseball games and The Daily Show again for the first time in a while.
I bet it did. It's crazy, right?
It's
premiere week.
It was premiere week, yeah. And I watched some of the stuff on your recommendations.
Uh-oh. Oh, boy.
Here we go.
I got my caveats ready, my friend. I got them ready. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I watched Forever.
Oh, interesting. Okay, what'd you think?
Which I thought, I don't know if I'm going to stick with it, but my wife watches... she's got her collection of shows that I've sort of sworn off of, but she watches them while she's like having lunch or folding laundry or something like that when I'm not around. And,
right.
And she watches Elementary. And I don't see how this Forever isn't really Elementary. It's Elementary with that supernatural element of the fact that he is immortal and unkillable as like a story point. But otherwise, it seems like it's pretty much Elementary. He's got his police buddy and he's super observant, very much like transparently a Sherlock Holmes kind of guy. He observes everything and knows facts about you just by looking at you. And they solve crimes. Of course they do. But I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was good. I thought it was actually really interesting. And I think Ian Griffith is a good actor, although his accent is like the most stereotypical... like Americans think this is an English accent. It's like super posh, plummy English accent.
Yes, and when you started that, you sounded a little bit like maybe you were going to say that because you were mocking Sherlock Holmes. You're in Elementary. I thought you were going to say you didn't like it, but you found some hope there.
Oh no, it's one of those shows that is. I think you know what you're going to get from it, right? It's a procedural. Mm-hmm. It's got an interesting twist. It's got it's got an interesting main character. And, you know, it looks like perfectly well-produced stuff. So I'm sure it's going to be like Elementary, right? Which I don't watch. I've seen a few episodes and I think it's perfectly fine. It's just, you know, it doesn't rise to the level of like, oh, I've got to watch this. But, you know, it's... it can sound like you're damning it with faint praise when you say it's a competently executed procedural, but you know, they didn't used to competently execute procedurals and they do,
right.
They do now. And this is one
CBS
of those.
CBS does for sure. I mean, but this is ABC. And I think that the surprise on that show, Jason, and I'm with you. I kind of like it. I don't know. I actually like Elementary and that's kind of one of my, mm-hmm. No one else calls them guilty pleasures, but I like that show. I like Sleepy Hollow and Blacklist, especially. Those are my network kind of favorites. And, you know, there's just they're not cable ready. They don't.
Sure. Don't really... they don't aspire to be something that's gritty and art that's going to tell us something about the human condition. But they can be really entertaining shows. And, you know, I think
Absolutely.
Elementary is that. And so, yeah. So Forever, I was like, yeah, this is totally in that vein. If you're somebody who likes Elementary, you should totally watch Forever because it's sort of the same show. And for fans of genre TV, I mean, the fact that this guy is seems to have been like granted immortality by, you know, because he was defending the helpless and got killed for it. And so he's granted this gift of immortality. And that's an interesting little twist that makes it more than just Sherlock Holmes because he's got this superpower, although it's very limited because it's just him dying and
right.
It hurt, you know, it's that moment of like it hurts every time, but he can,
right. And,
he can
and I don't know what happens to my clothes or no one saw me die. But
no.
Other than that, if you can put that aside, I agree, I like it. I probably will watch it periodically. I do like the element that they did introduce at the end of the pilot where there is someone out there.
He's got like a counterpart.
Yeah, he's got and he's stunned to find that there's someone just like him who mm-hmm. has quote unquote the curse and has lived maybe a couple hundred years just like he did. But you know, the surprising part to me on Forever is that they did the sneak pilot on Monday the 22nd And then it shifted to its regular time slot at 10 o'clock on Tuesday.
I know, and I missed that episode.
Yes, and this is partly why, Jason, partly why broadcast television is a disaster. Because they're like, hey, we got a shell game. No, it's actually not on Mondays. It's on Tuesdays. But and they expect people to follow that, and they don't. That's such an archaic thinking back when there was three or four networks. But the surprising part is that it did well on Tuesday. And historically, Tuesdays at 10 o'clock for ABC have just been a graveyard. Yeah. So there's really – and it's going up against Person of Interest and Chicago Fire, which are big 10 o'clock shows for CBS and NBC. And so, hey, maybe Forever is going to stick around.
Maybe so. I got to learn my lesson that when I am trying out a new TV show, I just need to get the season pass on the TiVo, not just record the pilot.
Right.
Because inevitably what happens is I watch the pilot, but 2 weeks have gone by, and I'm like, God, I already missed the next two episodes. And you can go on demand and watch them that way, and I suppose I might do that with Forever. But to do it the next day, it's like I just, you know, I didn't watch the show until like 5 days later, and I already missed episode two, which is stupid.
I know. It's very frustrating. I really hate when they do that.
Yeah. I watched Black-ish.
Oh, I'm interested to hear what you have to say about that.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah, exactly.
I can see how they are trying to find a match for Modern Family.
Well, finally, right?
After many attempts. Well, and last year they had shows they could have matched with Modern Family, like Trophy Wife, and they're just like, nah, we're going to put bad matches on.
Yeah, they are thick-headed and stubborn over there, and they finally decided, well, let's put a family comedy behind the family comedy.
Like, literally when Lawrence Fishburne appears as the grandpa, I turn to my wife and say, hey, Lawrence, that Ed O'Neill's got a pretty sweet gig. You want some of that? Yes. Yes, I do. I will do that because that's his job. He's playing that part. I thought it was really funny. They went against sitcom tropes in a few places that I thought was really good. Like, there's that moment where he's over-celebrating the fact that he's going to get promoted, and you just know he's not going to get promoted, and then there's going to be a wah-wah, right. Oh, it's so embarrassing. And instead, he does get promoted, but he gets promoted to the head of the urban division.
Right.
And he's like, wait a second, you made me the vice president of Black? You know, it's like, this is not what I'm here for. And I liked that it was it went... And there was a really funny joke about his kid wanting to play field hockey. And the line that made me laugh out loud was, the son says something like, I'm going to, you know, everybody's talking about field hockey. And he says, no, everybody has never talked about field hockey. So I thought it was, funny. It reminded me a little bit of a Bernie Mac in the sense that it was a sitcom with a Black family, but also trying to be broader and speak to a broader audience. And I don't know if that saying that is like horribly racist or what, but it's like, you know, sometimes I felt like sitcoms with Black casts were targeted. It's like, we're going to target this for this audience, and it's a demographic play by the network. And Black-ish is a show about a Black family that is unabashedly for everybody.
Exactly. And that's you're right that most of the shows that were that had predominantly Black cast or were about Black families were directed to Black audiences. I mean, there's no way around it. And you know, Bernie Mac show was great. It did very well on crossover numbers. Everybody loves Chris. Or everybody hates Chris.
Yeah,
was a great series that was on a network that nobody watched. So mm-hmm. that had a little bit trouble crossing over because it just couldn't find any audience. But yeah, Black-ish is in that vein. It's even a little broader. I mean, it's kind of like the new Cosby Show.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be Look, it came out of the gate really strong. The ratings were great. It was kind of a stunner how well it did. And, it actually improved on the demographic for Modern Family. And I think that's part of a tune-in thing. It might go down in a little bit next week. But I think that's a hit. And that is really – that's really great. It's in the spot it's supposed to be. And I think it's a super relatable series. But also it's the bottom line is any comedy – has to be funny, and that show is very funny.
It's funny, and the lead actor Anthony Anderson. Mm-hmm. he's really good. I mean, he's really likable. This is the trick, and I think the Cosby Show is like this too, honestly. And Bernie Mac was exactly like this, which is he's a character who has flaws and makes his families roll their eyes, and yet you got to like him. He's just too, you know, you like him. And so you're there with the family. You're like, you know, he does stupid stuff, but I love him. And that, you know, he really carries that off. I was really impressed.
Yeah. And what I like about it, and I did it when in my review, I noted that is that, you know, some people said, oh, yeah, I mean, it was a little over top about the son wants to have a bar mitzvah. Well, that's a real life story. That's a true story is that Anthony Anderson's son, who, you know, has only gone to private schools because his dad is famous and rich. You know, he said, hey, Dad, I want a bar mitzvah. And
right. All my friends are turning 13 and they get bar mitzvahs. I want one, too. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was great. And he did actually throw him a bro mitzvah. And he trademarked the name. And like he said, to the critics, that was like, he said, like every Jewish friend of his son was like, that's the best bar mitzvah.
That's awesome. That is really awesome. Well, I'm glad that one, you know, you didn't steer me wrong. You didn't steer me wrong. That was
no.
That,
and
that was,
you know, what's funny, this didn't really come across. I didn't put this in the review. And if people weren't like following me on Twitter the day that down in July when Prester was on, Larry Fishburne is crazy. I mean, he's wacky. He's way crazier than you think he is. I mean, obviously he's been on Pee Wee Herman's show, so he has a lot of range. But he came out and he was as playfully odd as you've ever seen him. He was pretending to be a 13-year-old girl at one point. He was way over the top, and you're like, wait, this is Lawrence Fishburne, who's a total badass and a great actor.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's good. I'll watch more of that, definitely. Yep. I watched Gotham.
Oh, and
TV's Gotham. Well, my friend Phil Michaels described it as origin story of the series. and that actually, I think, that's what I'd say about it. And my wife didn't really like the violence in it. And she's like, I watch other violent shows. I'm not quite sure what it is. And I think the question is, it's incredibly well produced. I think the casting is amazing. But my concerns are, one, is it really going to be origin story of the series, or are they going to try to get, you know, I need to see a story arc. I know it was really cute to see all these Batman villains when, you know, Batman villain babies, basically, right?
Right.
but I want, you know, I feel like the arc is very clear if they execute it, which is Jim Gordon is the one honest cop in a dirty town, and he's trying to find ways to, you know, get to where he needs to be for justice to be served while navigating through all of the corruption around him. And that could be, and yeah, and with larger than life villains and crazy things that happen because it is based on a comic book. If they can carry that off, I think you know, the actors, the double act of Donald Logue and McKenzie from the OC guy, I keep calling him the OC guy. I think those guys are good. I think they could carry it off. I just worry about is it going to be unrelentingly bleak, because it is a comic book thing. It does need to kind of be quirky and funny too, and I worry about that it's going to just devolve into, and this is somebody else who's going to be in a comic book in 10 years kind of thing.
Right. And he's, you know, he's Bruno Heller, who created the series and writes it, and he's we talked last time, he's the guy from Rome.
Yeah.
Here's a quote that he had about like what is the series kind of. You know, you have this dark metropolis and you don't have superheroes. And his quote is, well, that's the situation the show is all about, is how do you deal with crime on this level when there are no superheroes, when there's just ordinary mortal men and women trying to solve these issues? It's as much about the hope and the struggle that they're engaged in as waiting for a savior. It's about men and women, not about superheroes. And to me, that's the more interesting story.
Well, that's good. I'm intrigued by it. I think it looks like it could go down one of two paths. And this goes back to what you said last week, in fact, which is you look at the creator, you look at Bruno Heller, and you're like, all right, I'm going to give this guy the benefit of the doubt because he's made good decisions in the past. So let's assume that he's going to make the right decisions with this show.
Yeah, absolutely. He has stated, you know, that it won't be a villain of the week that is like, you know, the little cub villain.
Yes.
You get to meet them. He's, you know, he just said the pilot had to roll them out, a couple of them out, more than a couple actually, and obviously the Penguin got, you know, he had a pretty big play in that one. But he said no, but it's not going to be that every week. It's going to be more about Gordon and his partner, and then just how messy Gotham is.
All right, I'm looking forward to that. Definitely. Hey. And then the last one that I'll mention that I watched of the new things is I watched Scorpion, slash Scorpion,
right.
Closing and, an HTML tag that isn't slash Scorpion.
And Scorpion.
Yes, and Scorpion. And it's gotten a lot in nerd circles. It's gotten a lot of guff this week, a lot of shame for its ridiculousness. Mm-hmm. And I can't dispute that. What I would say about it is I thought it was a, you know, very, very glossy entertainment. And I thought that some of the characters are interesting, although they're a little bit too prefab for me. And I'm thinking of the guy with the hat from American Pie, who's like, hey, I'm a psychologist with a hat and I can figure out what people are thinking. And I was like, yeah, but I like the main guy was interesting. And, yes. And I felt like, yeah. So I felt like the characters and Catherine McPhee was present and a waitress.
Right.
Robert Patrick is in every pilot. That's his job.
Yes.
But the plot was just ridiculous, and leading to the most ludicrous thing I've seen on TV in a long time, which is that car going under the plane with the Ethernet cable. And again, as a computer guy, I look at that and I'm like, what is happening? But also, like, the software's on the plane, and if one thing happens at one airport, all the planes are going to crash, which doesn't really make sense, and they immediately leap to, we're going to have to shoot down some jets in order to clear the air for other jets. And there's just a moment about 20 minutes in, which is like, Robert Patrick is going to make some statements of fact that are completely false, and you just have to accept, well, he's the military guy, he must know what he's talking about. And it just was ridiculous. So I you know, I don't think I'm gonna watch Scorpion again, but I don't think it was irredeemable. I just thought that the plot was totally it was like, literally, we need to have the thing where there's a Ferrari under an airplane.
Yes.
And how do we get there?
That was very much a stretch. And it's funny because in my review of it, because I didn't completely slam it, I was like, you know, if it gets as interesting as the guy that it's based on, and he's an interesting character in his background, and you know, if it gets as interesting as that guy's background, it'll be good. And it's not like, you know, it's going to be well done at some point because it's CBS. I would love to see the next one, because the pilot, I think, had to have that plane scene in it. That's how they sold it.
Sure.
I'm not saying that I'm going to continue to watch forever, but I think that the elements are there for it to be a success on CBS.
Episode two will be constructed. Well, you can tell that they want a little bit of numbers.
Yes.
Right? They want that kind of action. CBS knows that kind of works. And in this, and they want some sort of procedural action-y kind of combination. I mean, you can see the different elements that CBS is plucking out here. And maybe, yeah, without the kind of requirement for the big ticket item in the pilot, it'll make more sense. Because I think there's totally a show here.
Yes, that's important.
But that's the... Yeah, is it just going to be that kind of level of ridiculousness, or are they going to, you know, let the characters be characters and not just kind of tropes that have been laid out? Hat guy,
and then the kid, you know, the kid who doesn't speak, but now he's a genius because we're all geniuses and we recognize it. It's, you know, here's the thing though: when I was looking at that, I was like, okay, this is not really a show that I would watch, but is it doing what CBS wants it to do? Well, not completely, because it's a pilot, but I have faith that that CBS with its notes and whatever will turn that show around. Hmm. They'll get it in the right direction. But I did laugh because I did take heat this week for not like stomping it to death, which is kind of a strange way to find your criticism.
Right. Well, it's nonsense, but it was, it was not unwatchable. Actually, the show that I turned off was Red Band Society.
Oh yeah.
I couldn't even, I got like 15 minutes in and I was like, I hate the show already. I have to just shut it off. So I watched the whole Scorpion. Kids. I checked my email during it, but I did watch the whole thing.
All right.
Red Band Society is so bad.
It's so bad. And I did tweet at one point before my review came out, I said, you know, I think Fox is hoping that because these kids are sick and some of them have cancer, that we're going to be nice to this show. That's not true. That is not true. It is terrible. It is. Coma Boy, who can talk even when he can't, he's talking about things he can't possibly see. He's in a coma.
Yeah.
He's like magical thinking. It's just the show is really terrible.
And that if you're somebody who likes to laugh at totally unnecessary narration, that is the show for you. It is the endlessly, I mean, there are other shows that are narrated. Blackish is narrated, but But Red Band Society is not, they should just have the, it be, it would be better if it was just the narrator, just the kid in the coma, and we watch the kid in the coma lay in the coma the whole time, and then he tells his stories. That would be a better show, but because there's so much narration.
I was thinking, you know, for a kid in a coma, he's really talky.
Yeah, well, he has no one else to talk to but the audience because he's in a coma.
Very talky. Yeah. And yeah, that it's a level of craziness on that show. But I will say, since we're talking about voiceovers, and we might get to this at some point, and we did touch on it slightly, that is not the most voiceover show. Wait till you see, or no, don't see, Manhattan Love Story. Wow. But, you know, quickly before we move on to whatever else you watched or whatnot,
sure.
I did want to get back to, like, Bruno Heller, because yeah. You talked about your wife being disturbed by the violence, or you were.
No, she was. She was like, I don't know why I'm reacting this way, but I don't like, you know, I think it was the bleakness and the violence, and yeah.
It is very dark. Somebody asked me, hey, my 9-year-old wants to watch Gotham. I said, you know what, I think it's a little, the pilot's too violent. I don't know anything going forward, but the pilot is too violent. So, you know, my son watched it and he's 11, almost 12, and it was, I think, fine for him. We talked about it in advance. But here's the quote that I liked, and this tells you a lot about Bruno Heller. Somebody brought up the violence in the pilot during the press tour in July. And his answer to that is, I think, exactly why I trust in him. And he said, quote, I think violence, if you show it, because somebody said, you know, they said they found the violence disturbing. And he says, quote, I think violence, if you show it, it should be disturbing. That's the only moral way to show violence. It shouldn't be comical. Or if it is comical, it should have had some moral force to it. And I thought, wow, I like this guy. Hmm. And he's, you know, and he went on, there's a lot more to it. And he went in and talked about that. But, you know, you just get the sense he's smart. He knows what he's doing. And I think once people... like we said last time, is that once people start getting over that it's Batman without Batman, I think the show will have its own, right. own direction.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a couple things about ratings there, like The Blackish did pretty well. Looking back on the last week of premieres and all that, what shows are looking like they're in pretty good shape, and which ones look like they're already on the verge of of somebody winning a Deadpool with them?
Yes, exactly. Well, I'm writing a story. It's coming out in a few days for THR, the Hollywood Reporter, about this very thing. And the hits that are not really surprising. Some of them are, but you know, NCIS New Orleans, not a surprise. That is a huge hit. Did anybody think that was not going to be a hit?
It's right in the name.
Right.
Is it an NCIS? Yes. Okay, then it's a hit.
Yeah.
Do people like New Orleans? Yes. Sure. Okay.
How to Get Away with Murder, which aired last night, was enormous. It was even bigger than Scandal.
That's the new Shonda Rhimes, right?
Right. She owns all of Thursday Night and ABC, and it just dominated. So that's going to be a hit. Blackish, again, that was I think a surprise for a lot of people, but a really pleasant surprise. Did really excellent in its premiere. Madam Secretary. On CBS did very well with Tay Leone as in the Hillary Clinton role.
Mm-hmm.
And even though that has a lot of people, you know, negative, who, you know, obviously if you're a Republican and you hate Hillary Clinton, you're going to think that this show is really about her and coming at a time when she might be running. She is running. So you'll be against the show. But I think that even though it's polarizing some of its audience, it's doing well. Forever, again, really a big surprise there. Maybe one of the biggest surprises so far. The shows that are not doing well, the worst show on television ratings-wise right now is it's a scripted series. We don't usually talk a lot about that, but it is a fall series, and that's Utopia.
Oh, yeah. That's the we put people in a out in the desert in a town, and they don't have to do anything or anything. Nothing really has to happen, and there's no winners, and it's not interesting. And watch, won't you?
Right. It's so bad. And I don't know if you noticed that what they did. I don't know if you noticed.
That's a professional TV critic there, folks. It's so bad, says Tim Goodman.
Well, you know, it's fascinating because, you know, Fox has new leadership, and the show was produced under the last leadership. So the new people who come in have just – they've really got like a – you know, I've said this before. They've got like a garbage fire
yeah.
going on at Fox right now. Welcome to your job. Oh my God, it's on fire. It's Utopia. The whole place is burned down. It's on like three times on the schedule. The whole fall schedule for Fox is completely imploding. But they did make a change, which speaks to the desperate nature of it. So instead of, you know, it was supposed to be this enclosed environment, and it wasn't Survivor. You know, you didn't get, you know, and now they're voting people out just like Survivor. So it's like, it's just like a really long version of Survivor. But so that's doing very badly. And then your favorite show, Red Band Society, is doing very badly.
Yay.
Yay.
I'm cheering it on to death.
And right now there hasn't been any other premieres that have done badly. Everything's kind of like, okay, we'll wait and see for the new shows. You know, we don't really talk much about returning shows during this time. But if you want to know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came back very soft.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's that was supposed to be last year's big buzz hit, and it didn't happen.
No, it definitely didn't happen.
Though people who watch it say that this was a much better start to the season.
Oh, yeah, I watched it, and, you know, we talked about it last week. They righted the ship halfway through, and I feel like they know where their storyline is this year, and it was perfectly fine. It is – Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, it's not like very many other shows on TV, in that it feels like it actually reminds me of Doctor Who in one way, which is that in Britain they have this idea of the family show, and it's like it's meant to be for everybody. Kids are supposed to like it, but their parents are supposed to be able to watch it with them, and everybody's supposed to get something out of it. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of feels like that to me, because although there's action, it's not gritty, it's not bloody. It feels like this is ABC saying, this is our all-ages family action drama, and I mean, that's weird. You don't see that a lot, especially on broadcast. So, you know, I liked it. I think they're doing a pretty good job with it now after a lot of time, but it's not... I think if you hold it up to standards of almost any other show on, it just doesn't even match, because it's so weird and you know, action. It's like A-team level action, in the sense that sort of nobody really gets hurt unless they get, they don't really show the blood, and it's not what it's about. I don't know.
The violent part is not really about that.
And, yeah, not like unlike Gotham, where you know the violence is violence. This is comic booky to the extreme of like, you know, things explode and stuff, but. Yeah, it's a
weird
show.
It already. That's if I would buy that in the room. What's the pitch? Things explode.
Things explode and stuff. Yeah,
yeah. I love it already.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
The,
can it be a plane? Can it be over a runway with a car? And how about like a Ferrari? What about that?
You know what they would? Yeah, that was absurdism to its the maximum. we'll see how Scorpion pans out. But yeah, it's you know, I apologize to everybody because I didn't hate it. Hopefully everybody will be
strong. Yeah. Words,
yes,
strong words. We should look at what's coming up in the next week as we record this. It's September 26th. Let's see. Selfie is coming.
Mm-hmm. You know what, it's I want that show to work. The pilot is not very good. It's a little bit annoying. I want that show to work. I'm a little bit worried about the premise, but the stars in it are really good. We talked a little bit about this last week.
John Cho, Karen Gillan, both great.
They're really, but I did. It's funny because unbeknownst to me, THR did a story with showrunners. Very interesting story about how they came up with the name for the show. And the showrunner for Selfie said, "Well, I ran it by Tim Goodman, and he loved it." And I said, "Really? I don't know. And he's like, no, definitely go with it." She was definitely joking, because I had said on Twitter when it came out that, oh, they're really going to regret the name of that. But now that I think about it, and as I responded to her later, I was like, you know, I think this show will actually, the title will work, because unlike Cougar Town, because people just stopped calling people cougars after a while. I mean, MILF has kind of lasted, but cougars really hasn't kind of lasted. But Selfie, I don't think you can really improve on Selfie. It's a short word. Then everybody does it of a certain generation, and also older than that generation.
Everybody
and
knows what selfies. It means. And
yeah,
it's
know
unique.
What it means. Yeah. Right. There's, you know, it was the famous selfie with Ellen and all the stars on, you know, on
the Oscars.
Oscars. Yeah. So I don't think a better word is going to come around for it. So I think it's going to stick. So I'm okay with that. Look, if it can get past the pilot. It's Emily Kapning who did Suburgatory.
Yeah, that was really good.
And she's a wonderful writer. She knows what she's doing. She has a really great sense of self. So I think going forward, the show will be better than the pilot.
All right. Yeah, that was that's what we said last week too. Is like I worry that the pilot goes too much in the direction of showing you the before, which is this person is awful, and you're like, why would I watch this? Because no, they're not awful by the end. It's right, keep watching. Right. It's fine. It's okay. Now you mentioned this earlier, also premiering one of your very favorites, Manhattan Love Story. I hear good things about the narrator.
Well, in the story that I wrote that's coming out in THR, I think maybe next week, I think I've very succinctly said it's insufferable and it must die.
Again, TV critic, folks, professional TV critic.
I mean, it's just it really is unlikable on so many paths. I mean, the opening thing is so sexist. It's like there's a guy walking and he's thinking all these thoughts, and then there's a girl walking and she's thinking all these thoughts, and his thought bubble is always, yeah, I'd do her. I'd do her. Yeah, I'd do her. Oh, nice rack. And then like, oh, have I done her before? I don't know. And then like he sees a woman and he's like, oh, I would definitely do her. And then she steps out and she's pregnant. She's like, what? He's like, whoa, no way, man. It's completely sexist. And then the woman's walking and she's like, oh, I love that. I love that. And it's all about like handbags and shopping and dresses. Mm. So it's like, oh, my God. And it doesn't get much better after that.
Ouch.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah, but the idea is it's like a rom-com in a sitcom. It's a sitcom rom.
Yes, it's you know, this naive girl from in the Midwest goes to New York and runs into a total douchebag. Yeah,
apparently, and falls in love.
Yeah, and falls in love. Which
good luck, kids.
When you watch it, you're like, you know what? I don't. Both of you are unlikable. The girl seems dumb. He's unlikable. I do not see this working. So you'll never. I don't think that's going to wash at all.
Okay, also premiering next week, Stalker.
Oh, yeah. See, Stalker I think is going to be a hit, even though I really loathe it.
Because... Isn't that the default when CBS puts something on, you're like, yeah, it'll be a hit. Because aren't they all?
You know what? It's they almost all are. But the last CBS show, also surprisingly starring Dylan McDermott, was Hostages. Wasn't that CBS? Yeah, that was CBS. And
yeah,
that didn't work at all. So maybe he's the curse that will bring it down. That I don't know, but I will say this. It's from Kevin Williamson, who did Scream and the awful The Following on
Dawson's Creek, right?
Yes, he did Dawson's Creek.
Like a million years ago.
Yeah. And he's done some other shows that were fine, but
sure.
He's in this streak now where I think he's getting, because once he did The Following, which Fox is trying to get a cable show, and it was just this gratuitous blood fest that I really hated.
Yeah, I had to answer a lot of questions to my kids as those ads ran on during football on Fox. Mm-hmm. I'm like, kids, just don't even watch the TV right now because it's awful.
It really is awful. And The Stalker is awful in that same way.
No.
Oh, yeah.
So it's gross and creepy.
Creepy is the key word, Jason, because it's like okay, let's get something that is kind of like Scream-ish with it just never ends. This person will be stalking these men and women for as long as they can, and how creepy people are. It has Maggie Q in it, who I love and adore. But of course, she can't just be the head of the task force that's doing this. She also has to be a victim of stalking, which is in there. And then Dylan McDermott is completely skeezy. He's totally skeezy in this, very shady. And he is somehow, he was a New York City homicide detective who maybe broke the law a couple times, and he and his wife have moved out to California in Los Angeles. But you find out, well, actually his wife moved away from him, and then he left the force and got a job in L.A. because no one fact checks. And now he's stalking his wife. And it's just like, really? Okay, too much. Too much.
Wow.
Yeah, not only that, within like the first 15 minutes, a woman gets lit on fire. So.
Oh, great.
Viewer beware.
All right, yeah, pay attention. Viewer, how about Bad Judge on NBC?
Okay, this is.
I saw these two, and I'm like, those aren't real shows, right? Stalker, Bad Judge. That's like a prank. That's like an MTV show, right? No, real show.
I would say, would you? This is what I tell people. Would you watch a show where the network promo is, she upholds the law, upholds the rules by day, and breaks them by night?
Oh, that sounds exciting. Tell me more.
So hokey. I mean, this is like 1,000 shows that have come before it. It's somebody who in their personal life is the total straight arrow, And then they're wacky and wild in the in their nighttime. And this is really bad. I love this show for its awfulness because it's precisely why I like writing about television. And that is Anne Heche. Yes, that Anne Heche. And Will Ferrell came up with an idea. Actually, Anne Heche came up with an idea while she was talking to Will Ferrell. And he basically said, yeah, we should turn that into a TV show. And she says, I'm already pitching it. Hmm. And then you're NBC and Anne Heche comes to you with Will Ferrell and says, hey, we have this story about Bad Judge. And instead of saying, you know, that's been done about a billion times. Instead of saying that, they said, wow, it's Anne Heche and Will Ferrell. We'll take it.
Can we get your autographs too?
Yeah. And like, so they took it and it's just a bad idea from famous people. That's how I put it. And poorly acted by Kate Walsh, unfortunately.
That's too bad. What about A to Z? Or for our English fans, A to Z.
A to Z. Yes. Well, the best way to put it, to describe A to Z, is if you took Manhattan Love Story.
Yeah, okay. I don't like where this is going.
And you took out all of the voiceovers and the sexism and the awful predictability of one sex dealing with the other, and instead you infused it with like saccharin and schmaltz and gooey stardust and rainbows and unicorns. Mm-hmm. That's this show. It's about Abe. He's the A, and he meets Zelda. She's the Z. You love it already.
Oh man, it's all about I love the alphabet.
Yeah. And they meet because it's a meet cute. Basically, somebody decided, let's make a series out of a meet cute. And so they meet, you know, she doesn't remember them meeting, but they met at a dance club and it was, you know, love at first sight for him. And he finally meets her and asks her out. And it's how A meets Z. That's literally the show. Hmm. And it's like, okay, you know what? I watched the show and I got three cavities and I don't want to watch you guys fall in love because you're annoying.
So it sounds like it's not aggressively bad like some of the shows we've talked about, but it's not your cup of tea because it's a super sweet saccharine-y romance.
Yeah, show. It's a rom-com, and so, you know, it follows Selfie, which I think is not good for either one of them, because when it comes to cancellation, that's an hour block that can be pulled off the schedule and replaced pretty quickly. And again, both of them are not very good pilots. Actually, I take that back. It doesn't follow Selfie. That's Manhattan Love Story, which I'm sure assumes that both of those will be
red alert
taken off. Right. But A to Z is a rom-com that if you're into that thing, you might like it. For me, it's like...
All right. This is an NBC. This is an
NBC that's NBC.
Show.
Yeah. Right. And I was just like, you know, it's a rom-com. And if you like that thing, fine. I just think this one is a little too syrupy.
All right. And the last one in our shows that are coming out soon is Grace Point, which we mentioned last week.
Right,
it stars David Tennant and not Olivia Colman. Unless you want to.
No, it's as I said last, that has so many problems, and in that, you know, you can track down the English language version, and that would be a much better decision.
It's translated from English.
Right, it's translated from the English, from the British, we should say. But you know what? I think I've watched another episode of it.
Yeah.
And because
is it well done? If the original didn't exist, would you say that it was good or not?
I would say it's mediocre. Mm. Yeah, and but now that we know that there was an actual brilliant version out there, you should track that down. my worry is that there's, you know, there's really nothing else on. So and look, there's a fire sale going on at Fox, and they're probably get rid of everything except for Gotham. And I think they're going to probably keep Grace Point because,
well, it's structured as a 13 episode series. So, I mean, it's going to tell that story. They might as well run it, right?
Yeah. I mean, exactly. And if you look at the schedule, it's like Scandal. It's going against Scandal. Everybody's going to watch Scandal. Who's watching that? It's going against Thursday Night Football. So those are your 1-2 finishers right there. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the crappy stuff on CBS, like 2.5 Men, but we already know that that's a hit. And then its other competition is the two shows we just talked about, which are Bad Judge and A to Z. So if you're looking for a drama, you know, at 9 o'clock on a Thursday night and you don't like Scandal, it's your choice. I mean, I think that's going to keep Grace Point going. But like I said, I watched the third episode, and it just, I want to keep watching more because I know that it changes at the seventh episode. But honestly, I just feel like hours are too precious. And I watched it and I thought, okay, you know what? This isn't very good. It's not as good as the original. And I don't want to spend two more hours of my time getting to, you know, the fifth episode to see what it's like there. I just don't think people devote that much time to shows that they don't like. So, right. Yeah, I say no.
You mentioned Thursday Night Football. How looking at the ratings, how is that going? Because that was it's a kind of a weird deal in CBS seating their Thursday night lineup in order to run the NFL in the fall. Is that how's that shaping up so far?
Well, I think it's a good bet for them. I know that some people have come out and said, oh, because Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder were doing so good that, you know, and Grey's Anatomy that, oh, they overpaid. But, you know, that's not really true. I think that football is always going to be a hit. It always drives viewers to other shows, particularly CBS shows. And, you know, it did lose this week to last night to Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder and Grey's Anatomy. But I think that going forward, it's going to be a good bet for them. And, you know, people forget that it really only goes till like the end of October, and then it switches back to NFL Network.
Right.
So it only goes to the end of October. It's not like it's going to go the whole season. And then they'll just put like what a whole bunch of other really popular CBS shows.
That's right. CBS has got shows to spare. So
yeah, I mean they've got that whole, you know, they're moving, I think, Big Bang Theory there. They've got The Millers, which I hate, but is there. They, you know, Elementary. All these shows are coming back. They'll fill that time slot.
Right.
It's not like they abandon Thursdays. And I think what they'll do is they'll get good ratings through the end of October, and they'll launch other shows off the end of it. And typical of CBS, it's you know, it's a money machine.
That's CBS. There's a profile of Les Moonves.
Yeah.
In the Hollywood Reporter, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's on the cover.
Yeah.
Very good profile as well.
Really nice story about – he's just an interesting guy, that Les
He really
Moonves.
Is. I love him. He's by far my – well, I mean, I love John Landgraf over at FX as well, because I think that he's definitely the smartest guy in the room. But when I came into the business, it was definitely Les Moonves, who was running CBS at the time, who really gave me the lay of the land and completely understands the business, which he passed down to everybody. And that's why CBS, whether you love it or hate it, and I hate its comedies, but I really like most of its dramas. It's just a well-oiled machine. You know, it's like looking at a BMW, and, you know, I just kind of understand from a business perspective of television. I'm really impressed that he turned that network around, and then he put in place the team that just makes it win.
And there was that story about how I think it's maybe even mentioned in this story that he like saw James Corden like 3 years ago and was like, I like this guy. And then like has been laying the groundwork to have him take over the Late Late Show for ages now. Like, he's just, even though he's the president of CBS, I mean, CEO of CBS, I believe,
right. Mm-hmm.
He could do whatever. And he's like doing talent acquisition on the side just because he can.
The guys can't miss. And that's, I found that a fascinating story, actually, that part about chasing Corden for that long and kind of keeping him in mind, because I'm sure that the person who didn't want to read that
was Craig Ferguson. Well, it sounds like he was like more like, this Corden guy, I like him. He's versatile. Let's come up with a vehicle for him. Let's do a, and I guess they tried to do a sitcom with him, and the timing didn't work with something or other. And then finally, you know, with the David Letterman transition happening, he must have had in the back of his mind, maybe that was a place for somebody. I don't know. On one level, it sounds like he was trying to find something else for him to do, but I could also read that as he wanted to put him kind of on hold.
Yeah.
And have him be sort of under CBS's control so that when Letterman left, he could, approach him about taking the second slot.
Yeah. And it remains to be seen whether that will transfer.
Who knows?
Translate. I, the guy's very likable and he's very talented. I would have liked Aisha Tyler.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you.
But yeah, that doesn't mean that he won't.
Corden, I mean, I've seen him on his sitcom and in those two episodes of Doctor Who where he was great. I think that's interesting. He won a Tony. Mm-hmm. He's had a successful sitcom that he wrote and starred in, and then I've seen him in a little bit more dramatic stuff and has done well with that. So I mean, he does seem like a really interesting talent. But you know, I'm with you that I was kind of hoping Aisha Tyler would get a job somewhere because she's really funny and smart.
Yeah, and you know, we don't have any women in that position, and yeah, also a person of color. So she's a double whammy, and she's super hilarious. But mm-hmm, that doesn't mean that he, you know, he's not. That doesn't take anything away from him, and he may be fine when that happens. So we'll see on that.
Yeah. Anything else we should talk about before we wrap up this edition? I was going to mention I saw Sleepy Hollow.
Oh yes, what did you think?
It's back, and I'm glad that it is just as totally insane as ever, because that's what I look for in that show. I'm glad they just went with there. That's the story of that show, right? It's like, this is going to be totally insane. There's going to be founding fathers from America doing crazy things in flashback. Yes. Timothy Busfield as Benjamin Franklin.
A nude Benjamin Franklin
and beautiful. I just, again, you know, that's what I get out of that show, is that it's completely crazy and that the characters are funny and likable.
And I've always said that it took a couple of episodes last year at the beginning where they were trying to make it like be a little more grounded, and that didn't work out. So yeah, it was great that they was like, you know what? The crazier the show is, the better it is.
Yeah. The characters ground it, but then the plot needs to be totally insane. And then the one thing I noticed that was interesting is at some point late last season, the producers realized that the headless horseman and the faceless out of focus devil in Limbo are not really compelling villains. And so they introduced John Noble, who is a villain, and the Headless Horseman, we saw in flashback last year that he's like this, you know, guy who loved the wife,
right,
and didn't get her because Ichabod Crane got her instead, and in the first episode this season, there's like a scene where he kind of fades in with his head, and he's that guy, and I'm like, see, they're giving even that guy him a personality, because it's much better if you've got villains who are people-ish and not just special effects. So I thought that was like a really smart correction that they did.
Yes, that was, in fact, I was thinking that same thing when they put the face to him, where he's like, has the power to allow you to see what he looks like. It's just a great idea. It's like, because you can't do much without the headless guys.
No, right? he doesn't have any. There's a scene where the headless horseman is walking around, and I'm like, I guess he can see? I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and that helped explain it. My favorite part before they revealed his face, though, was for the first time ever, the headless horseman took his shirt off, and he was really buff.
Oh, yeah.
And I literally laughed out loud, because it's like a really buff dude with no head.
With no head. Yeah, I thought, I expected it to be like festering sores and like stuff wiggling around out of like holes in the, and no, he's just like he's been working out.
Oh, he's been doing his core work. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that.
Well, when you got no head, you might as well work on the core.
Absolutely. And when you're part of the apocalypse, you're not going to win that. You got to be strong.
You got to be strong. Are you going to lose?
I watched that and I thought, welcome back. I love this show. And also on the same day, I watched Blacklist.
Blacklist.
I love that show. I really do. I've unabashedly loved the Blacklist.
I think that's the, I said this on some other podcast. I think that is the greatest use of James Spader, like deployment of Spader, where if you over Spader, everybody gets tired of him. So what the Blacklist does so well is like they have the plot and then Spader just pops in and he's like, I'm going to be Spader for a couple of minutes. And then he goes away again. You're like, oh my God, James Spader was here. And it like really works. Cause that show knows exactly how to use him.
He is the entire show when he's on screen. There's no doubt about it, but I do love that you just coined the phrase over Spader.
Yeah. You can over Spader. I think we've seen some shows he's been on have been over Spadered.
Right. And he was actually in a show that Boston Legal. He over Spadered. There was over Shatnering.
Yeah, well, exactly. You don't want to get Shatnered and Spadered.
No, no,
that is too much.
At the same time. But here's the thing. Okay, I love that. I'm glad it's back. I wish they wasn't like another two-parter. I'm sure that they've had to, you know, pay the Stormeyer the so much money to be in that role. As Berlin. But I'm glad that will wrap up soon. A great, great, fun show. But you talked about what we should talk about before we end. And I would say perfect thing to talk about is to reiterate that the best show in this fall is Transparent on Amazon.
And as we speak, is now available to stream.
Absolutely. All 10 episodes are now available on Amazon to stream. We should probably remind people that you need to stream it. You need to be an Amazon Prime customer.
Right.
Whereas you could go watch the pilot for free and then get hooked. But now that it's a series and all 10 episodes have dropped all on Netflix but on Amazon, you do have to be an Amazon Prime member. But it is the best show of the fall and well worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. So next week we'll come back and talk about, I don't know, other, we'll talk about some premiering shows and also maybe a special topic.
Yes, I think we have a special topic in mind, and we'll drop that on people next week, kind of, you know, frighten them with our forethought.
Yes.
And our foresight and vision.
That's what we're here for.
Just
shock people that this is a podcast that happens.
We don't want to like overspader it, but we're going to.
No, you can't overspader it. That's very bad. It's bad for everyone if there's too much spader. Keep it spader light.
Yeah. And who knows, Jason, by next week when we talk again, there could be a cancellation. We'll see.
Oh, man. Boy,
I'm thinking, because, okay, we're recording this on a Friday and we're going up on a Friday. I'm thinking there's a chance. The next time you hear us, that Utopia is dead.
Interesting.
Yep.
Do networks cancel things on Friday afternoon, just like other corporations release bad news on Friday afternoon, so nobody's paying attention?
Bring out the trash day. It's the best way to keep your stuff out of the.
What happens when they cancel Utopia? Do they like bring trucks, like a bus? Does a bus pull up in the town of Utopia and they're just like, get on, it's over?
Yeah, and they're gonna pull the gates down, the fake gates, and to this. All right, everybody on the bus. You know what I want to see? I want to see like a Simpsons episode about Utopia. You know, where it's just cynical, like, all right, so we're being canceled.
Actually, the brilliant thing to end a reality show like that would be to cancel it on the show. To do a last episode, and literally the last episode is everybody gets rounded up because it's canceled, and you see their reactions, and then they're taken off, and it's the end. That would be pretty cool.
Great. Actually, you know what? I like that idea. That is brilliant. And I think somebody should borrow it, because you could show the reaction
to
them being canceled, and then you could, like, show the tearing down of the sets, and then showing them get on the bus, mm-hmm. and then they bring it back, and then you film them all going back to their mundane lives where they told everybody that they were going to be this big TV star for 15 minutes of fame, and then they're back just like at the post office.
Brilliant. Unfortunately, if that does well in the ratings, then they'll be like, damn, we tore down the sets.
No, they'll spin it off as the Utopia people in their day job.
Yeah, that's a dystopia.
Dystopia. You know what? You have a calling, Jason. You have a calling for making TV shows.
Terrible TV shows, but as long as they don't get overspadered, I'm fine.
Yeah. Don't oversnell it.
All right. Good point. Well done. Well, Tim, it's been a pleasure. And we'll talk to everybody again next week, I think.
Absolutely, and at some point we'll have an interactive element to this podcast.
Yes, you can tweet at us. I'm at Jay Snell, and Tim is Bastard Machine. You can always find the show notes, and there's a comment form for the episode at theincomparable.com/TVTM/2 for this episode, or you can go to TVTalkMachine.com. And until next time, for Tim Goodman, this has been Jason Snell. Thanks for listening.